Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Reich's Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. Lord Gaul was my username back when I fell in love with the sport, Kakatugi, K1 fans, K1 USA, back when the forums were big, that was my name, Lord Gaul. Also, the other way to find my podcast, and the most efficient way to find a podcast, is to go into the iTunes search engine and enter Warman Kickfighting Show, and the show pops right up. We're going to jump right into it. It's the biggest weekend in kickboxing of the year. It is the first time that an event truly, truly fills the role of what the K1 World Grand Prix used to be. Normally this time of year we're all excited for, normally this weekend of the year we're normally getting ready for the biggest kickboxing event to go down, usually in Japan in the K1 World Grand Prix tournament. Since they've gotten away with the tournament, or they've avoided a tournament format, we have yet to have an event that has moved us, that has gotten us as excited as we have with Glory Collision going down in Germany tomorrow. But I'm going to go ahead and jump into the two big cards of the weekend. I am not leaving Bellator out. It's not how I get down. I make sure I get everybody in there. I'm going to go ahead and start off with the Bellator kickboxing event, which is going down in Florence, Italy. It is a mixed event. Octagon, of course, who've always had a connection to Georgia Petrosian in the way that M1's always had a connection to Fedor. We've got Octagon in here. They do a co-promotion type deal with Bellator Kickboxing. So it's a big full card. I'll jump right into it. I'm not going to talk about all the fights, but I will talk about some of the fights from the Victory World Series part, which is also a part of this co-promotion, and then I'll get into the Bellator Kickboxing portion of it. As far as the Victory World Series part goes, the most notable fights, I would say, is the Yohani Besajor, as he takes on Mustafa Haida. Mustafa Haida continues to rise as one of the better fighters in the world. He's fighting in a weight that's kind of really popular in Infusion right now, that 160 pounds, 72.5 kgs. I'm not sure if there's a big future in it, but right now Mustafa Haida hasn't had the gap. I believe they are at 70 kgs. The fight that I might be thinking of, I had it right. They're at 72.5. They're fighting for the ISKA World Championship. It's crazy that ISKA is still out there ticking. If you pay attention to the ISKA title, you'll notice that here and there it'll emerge, and there'll be a pretty decent fight that's reflected upon it. But, the days where WMC and what we thought WBC was going to be, it just didn't work out that way. It didn't carry, the buzz didn't continue for those organizations or for those belts. They slowly turned into trophies rather than titles, which is disappointing. But at the same time, it's really cool when you see two people compete for such a historic title, and ISKA is one of the last historic titles that we have in kickboxing and Muay Thai. I got Mustafa Haida winning. I just see him as the more elite kickboxer, but, time will tell. We also have Charles Frances as he takes on Armin Petrosian. Again, I've talked about Dirty Petrosian before. He's, he can play in kickboxing, but really, sometimes he, stuffs his own offense, gets into clinches that he doesn't have to, but he is a better kickboxer than Charles Frances. It should be a good one. I definitely want to see Petrosian. It's always going to be weird, when your brother is who his brother is. But they've pretty much done well with the balance throughout the years. And Petrosian's got some good wins on undercards, fighting alongside, his brother. And he had his opportunity in Infusion, their reality show, even though he didn't have the K1 success that, of course, is his brother, who, of course, is the all-time great in Giorgio, one of the all-time greats. Armin's had a pretty good career. He's made some money. He's had some good fights. He's definitely lost to some elite guys, but he's got some good names in there too. I think he will win this ISKA title. Not to mention the Italy factor. It's really, really tough to beat Italians. In the world, I'd say only beating a Spanish guy in Spain is more difficult than beating an Italian guy in Italy when it comes to kickboxing. So we'll see. We move into the Bellator kickboxing card. Gaji, of course, is Gadget Boy is one of the better fighters in the world. Luca Novella, Lovello is going to give him a push, but Kareem Gazi is not going to lose. In my opinion, I think he's the better fighter. Again, if it's close, it could go the way of the Italian guy, but Kareem Gaji is a very talented guy and a really good breakdancer, and he plays with combinations well, combinations of kick flow well. I think he gets his hands raised here. Denise Kilholtz in a, what I'm remembering correctly, is a rematch with Gloria Piotr. If I remember correctly, Gloria got the decision that she shouldn't have gotten in the first one. I thought Denise Kilholtz clearly won the clean kickboxing, whereas Gloria just kind of played with trick shots all fight. And she did land a couple, maybe giving her a round, but the clear, consistent kickboxing scores came from Kilholtz. She'll have to do that again, and she'll have to do it even more in Italy, because it's sometimes not so much just the judge's fault, but when that crowd gets excited and they get behind an athlete, and you know, you start to have any kind of success, the oohs and ahs can stem, can sway the judges despite themselves. But Gloria's tough. She'll put up a good show, good fight. I think Denise Kilholtz is truly the best kickboxer in the world at 125 pounds. I think that she wins this fight. We move on to Kevin Ross as he gets Alessio Arduini. And again, Ross is still on the developing tour. I think Alessio is a little bit better than the last person he went against, but I would like to see Kevin Ross get a little bit better name than this moving forward. But he's still getting used to the kickboxing flow for a guy who's used to having the ability to work and clinch and pop elbows and, of course, get those big, you know, sweeps and dumps that he's used to. He's getting into his kickboxing flow. I'm hoping that in the year 2018 they push him a little bit more, but I feel that he's the better kickboxer of these two. It's not that Alessio's not going to, you know, bring a fight, but I think Ross is the better fighter. Joe Schilling gets Vitorio Lermano. Joe, of course, with the opposition that he's getting as a Bellator kickboxer so far, he's been the superior guy. It's just, you know, some sort of mental lapse or him going for the KO or him just not being conscious of his own defense as he's going for the kill has resulted in him not having things go his way. But, I mean, he's talented enough to beat Lermano. No question about it. This should be a clear one-sided victory for Joe Schilling, but we'll see what happens moving forward. Jordan Watson versus Georgia Petrosian is a fight that could have happened a long time ago. It's the best fight that Petrosian's had in a little while. Watson, you know, even though he too, like Petrosian, had a history in full rules Muay Thai, Watson can kickbox. Like, he plays his kickboxing with more of a body kick game than a low kick game, but he gets his hand flow going pretty good. Georgia Petrosian, of course, the same side counters, his pull counter, his, you know, clean 1-2 and 3-2s, the way he sneaks that sneaky knee in there. Petrosian's the truth. It'll be tough to beat Georgia Petrosian, and again, in Italy. But Watson's always game. And one of my favorite things about my kickboxing documentary, I go back and I look at the footage that I recorded 5 years ago. I had asked about this, what should Georgia Petrosian do and what next? And I was talking to Vinny Shorman about it. And Shorman's like, he should have Jordan Watson fight him. He said that he's got nobody else to fight in K1 because at the time K1's kind of running into trouble. So Watson fighting Petrosian is the ideal elite matchup that you want. And again, I think it's Petrosian's best fight since Jonsi, I'd say. That, you know, like that's Jonsi and adding to Jonsi, I would even say Risti. Those are elite kickboxers, but usually some of his fights in Italy outside of the Glory brand have been guys that, you know, you could see that the fight was over with before it began. But Petrosian, he's going to bring a good fight here. This should be really, really entertaining. Watson's going to bring a fight. And in Italy, I expect Petrosian to get the victory. So we now move on to what you're all listening for. We're going to go to Glory Collision. And it needs to be said, it is a very important card. It's one of the biggest cards in kickboxing. Since, you know, K1 has run into its difficulties, this one is definitely a standout card. It's definitely an elite card with elite matchups. It's the most full card. I've watched high-level kickboxing cards before. I watched it Showtime and K1 do a show together, and it gave me pretty much every kickboxing star I could possibly imagine. I had a tournament. I had a bunch of single fights that, you know, let me watch Petrosian fight live. Let me fight, you know, Nicky Holtzkin fought live that night. I went to the Amsterdam Arena and seen a couple of really great shows. Since those days are gone, this is the next great show. Like, I'd say this is the best card. I would even throw, when Glory did that event that they did in Japan not too long ago where they had the four are the what would be a 32-man tournament, I believe. No, excuse me. It was a four fights in one night. So it was a 16-man tournament as opposed to an 8. So when they did that night, that was a decent card. But the execution of it didn't flow as well. The execution of this seems like it's going to be a little bit closer to what I had when I went to the Amsterdam Arena and I watched it Showtime and K1 do a card together. Errol Zimmerman won the title that night. Tyron Spong had his K1 debut. Really, it was an excellent night. We had Remy Bonjasky versus Melvin Manhoff. And then, as I mentioned before, it Showtime gave me Shahid Al-Awash. I had Gago Drago. I had a full card. This is the most full card since then, and I'm excited to bring these fights to you guys and just tell you the importance of what it is to have a big-time kickboxing match, or big-time kickboxing event, not just match, but it's a big-time kickboxing match that is carrying this Enrico Verhierven and Bada Hard. Well, let's go ahead and rumble through this card. So, first of all, I will just go ahead and start with... I'll start with Anatoly Moiseev as he takes on Dylan Salvador. Again, I'm a big Dylan Salvador fan. I would say of the Nasser K guys in France, he is the one that I feel has the style that best suits being a kickboxer as well as an elite Muay Thai fighter. I see him as a guy who, and he's still pretty young, in the next 3 years, he will emerge and be in some tournaments. And now he's had some difficulties with the rule set. Now, and the guys in K1, they call it a little bit different. They've got on him about, trapping kicks and catching kicks and then throwing offense out afterwards. He didn't hold it long, but the refs were all over him in K1 for it, and I wasn't a big fan of it. I've got no problem with somebody trapping and throwing. You know, that's what I call it. It's called when someone lands a low kick on you, if you catch and fire off of it, I usually call it a trap because it's like you don't keep it long. You don't catch and then sweep. You just hold and you throw hands, so it's not as long as what I would consider a catch. I've always called it trapping, but he did that several times in that bout, and as soon as he did it, immediately the ref had jumped on him, and I didn't think that they should. I hope they are not as critical with him here, but they might be. With that said, I think Anatoly Moiseev has got more tools. With him being in the different stance, with southpaw stance, I could see Moiseev playing a little bit more of his boxing, a lot of more of his spinning techniques, but Dylan Salvador can really fight, and this is going to be a really entertaining bout. I've got Moiseev taking the first fight of the night, which should be one of the most entertaining fights of the night. Next fight on the card is Hinsey Bakiri as he makes his return as he takes on Antonio Gomez. Antonio Gomez, I've seen him fight before. I remember his name popped up on one of the Infusion cards, but I like Bakiri. Bakiri is a guy who's he can fight, and he's got glory opportunities before. He's got decent kickboxing flow. I really like his skill set here. I think he wins. I don't think he'll stop Gomez, but I think he'll put on a pretty good showing. So shout out to Bakiri as he should get this victory and move forward. Next fight on the card is Mousab Imran as he takes on Fabio Pinca. This is an easier one for me, too. I think Fabio Pinca beats him. Mousab Imran is a very talented kid, very talented guy. He can fight. He can really, really fight. The only problem that I have with this is he is a guy who I think Mousab Imran will throw the combinations and get into his offense, get the crowd kind of hype with the way that he walks people down, and he can land the bigger boxing shots. So there's a good chance that might have a show up on the scorecards. But Fabio Pinca is just too slick, too smart for the game. He's too strong at taking the kicks. He'll be able to fire away with his body kick, keep Imrani off balance, and then find his offense with his hands here and there. It's not impossible for Mousab Imrani to win this fight, but for me, the clear, more skilled guy who's more accomplished against better opposition is Fabio Pinca, and that's an easy one for me. Again, Imrani, it's all action, brings it, and there's no question that Imrani could score something to the body that puts Pinca down. But Pinca really doesn't have a history of getting stopped, so I think that's going to be very difficult. I've got Fabio Pinca winning that one. Returning to the lightweights, the two lightweight bouts that I open with, that's a tournament. That tournament will then finish after the Fabio Pinca Imrani super fight, and then we go to Moiseev versus Bakiri on my card, and I think Moiseev takes it easy. I think his kickboxing game is just way too superior for Bakiri, who's very good and can kickbox. And again, the damage goes into it matters. For all I know, Bakiri could blow Gomez out. I do not see Moiseev blowing Dylan Salvador out at all. I think that's going to be a competitive one. But I think Anatoly Moiseev has got legit awesome kickboxing, and I think he wins tonight. Sitichai then takes on Murat Grigoryan. It would be the, what, fourth time I want to say they fought in like the last, you know, 13 months. They fought a lot. There's a period of time where they fought twice in 3 months. So I want to say this is the third time they fought in less than a year. Again, it's just, I could see Murat Grigoryan's pressure in his boxing scoring, but Sitichai is going to be hitting him. He's going to have his offense. I know Sitichai is going to score body kicks and the rear leg low kicks clean, and I know he's going to score boxing and run Murat into left hands clean. I know that's happening, no question about it. But I also think that there's a really, really good chance that Grigoryan can land enough hands to sway the judges, because he lost close. Some people felt like it was, you know, clear one way or the other. Most people clear towards Sitichai. And it's almost like culturally people think that they're disrespecting Sitichai if they say that the other guy was close or competitive or threw enough offense. I don't feel that way at all. I thought Robin van Roosmalen had some really good moments with his hands against Sitichai, so I would have had no problem whatsoever if Sitichai or if Robin would have got his hands raised on that one, because I thought it was a close bout. I think that Murat Grigoryan also had moments where he made the bout close, but I think that Sitichai was the better in that last one. If you're telling me to pick a winner, I'm going to pick Sitichai. I believe he's one of the best fighters in the world. But if you are saying, does Murat Grigoryan have a chance, I think he very much does. So I've got Sitichai beating Murat Grigoryan in a 5-round decision, ending the first portion of the card. We head into the prelims, where we have a interesting card between Adraj Bruhl and Tijani Bestati. And Bestati, a Moroccan-based fighter who fights in Holland, or trains in Holland, taking on Bruhl, the German fighter. I think that this was a, you know, make sure you get a German guy on the card, because really it's a, you know, there's a lot of Dutch fighters here, people training in Holland. There's not a lot of German representation on this card. So I think that that's why this fight was put together. Bruhl is a tough guy, but I think Bastani is going to get his hands raised on this. But Bruhl has the talent to definitely, you know, get his, you know, score the offense to get himself in a position to win. But I like Bastani out on the, you know, just looking on the outside looking in. But we shall see. But that might be the one night. There are two German fighters on the card. I think Bruhl of those two has the toughest task. So I've got Bastati winning that one. We then go into the female fight, where it is going to be Tiffany Von Soest taking on Jessica Gladstone. Gladstone really overachieved in her last fight. What I mean by that is not only did she get a victory that I wasn't fully expecting her to get, I thought that she could win close, but you know, I kind of leaned the other way looking at it. But she performed better than I thought. So not just won, but performed well. And I think that she will really have moments where she's able to score singles here and there against Von Soest, but the Tiffany's movement is the killer for her here, because Tiffany's a far superior athlete, and if you don't have the ability to cut off, match the athleticism, and then play with your big shots in between, plus the clinch doesn't come into play here, you're not going to be able to do what a Denise Kilholtz was able to do, and you're not going to be able to do what a Kaylee Reese was able to do. You're going to have to figure out how to slow her down enough to get the kickboxing in. And Gladstone is a tough girl, but it'll just be too difficult for her to run down the athlete, Tiffany Von Soest. Next fight is a girl who I really felt had her best performance last fight. I'd seen her fight before. I'd seen her win before. But Emile Debbie, Debbie is a girl who I thought has always been talented. But there's a certain level that I was like, you know what? Despite her record, I wonder what it looks like when she goes against somebody good. She scored everything. She scored so many 1-2s, body kicks, low kicks. She brought it in her first round bout. Now she goes against Isis Verbeek, who is as veteran as it gets. Verbeek has fought, you know, top girls. She's fought, you know, Mon Barlow. She's fought, you know, Infusion. She's really had a good run of things. I think she will be competitive, but I think she will lose. I think Emile Debbie will get a 3-round decision, and she will move on to face Tiffany Von Soest on the collision card final, which is going to open the Glory Collision pay-per-view portion of the card. Murat Grigoryan gets Daniel Solaja. I did miss one more. He's from Germany. I apologize. I missed that one. I got Murat Grigoryan all the way. That pressure and offense is just too much. Murat Grigoryan is sometimes more Grigoryan style than Murat Grigoryan is. For those of you who are wondering what that is, they play a pressure kickboxing game with heavy combinations for low kicks. they rarely do you see them bounce around in space and look to find shots or counter in between off of the bounce. They'll counter in between in the exchange, but they won't do it off the bounce. And for those of you who are wondering what I'm talking about is, there are fighters who will just kind of play almost like a Mayweather, bounce, step, slide away, make you overreach, and then counter in between. And then there are fighters who you start to exchange, and they'll start right in the middle of your exchange. The Gregorians do that. They will pressure, and if you start to throw offense, all of a sudden, while you're throwing offense, you'll just see, you'll feel that here comes heat coming right back. And more times than not, they get their opposition to earmuff up while they get their offense, more so than the opposition keeps throwing until they land something big. Harak Gregorian is going to do that in this one. He's going to get the victory at welterweight, and hopefully they use him again down the road. Daniel Younga is going to go against Michael Duhut. Michael Duhut is coming off one of the most Michael Duhut-esque wins that you could ever imagine. He wins an infusion just a few weeks ago. His opponent got injured throwing a punch, injured his shoulder, giving the TKO victory to Michael Duhut. The last time these two fought, it was in, I'm pretty sure it was these two. It was in Chicago, and I was there, and I was watching in the back with Gokhan Saki and some of the other fighters. And then Duhut had gone down, and then everybody's kind of waiting for him to get up, and then Duhut didn't get up. And I remember some of the fighters, I think it might have been Saki, saying, man, you know, it's just his fighting heart is what everybody questions, his fighting heart. And if you look at the way Tyrone Spong hit Duhut with a huge shot, a huge, huge shot. After Duhut scored the down, he went in looking for the kill. Tyrone hits him with a big shot. And I'm not saying that he wasn't in bad shape, but just the manner and how he fell to his butt, and then it looked like he got his legs comfortable and sat on the bottom rope, it looked like the punch knocked the will out of him. So that's why people in kickboxing, they challenge Duhut's heart. Daniel Younga, out of all the fighters in that division, he can play combination and low kick with anybody in the world, but worse, he can play punch for punch with anybody. He'll just bite down and keep coming. He believes in his chin. He'll get right in front of you. Even though he lost to Tyrone Spong in the tournament that I mentioned before, he was on his feet after he was buzzed. He lost, you know, just taking shots on his feet. So Daniel Younga will come out with Duhut. Duhut will, of course, look to land spot, you know, offensive space, and then find, you know, big hands and kicks here and there. But Daniel Younga, who's really struggled on the Glory roster since, what, you know, making it to that tournament final, he's had a rough couple of years. He's going to win this one. I've got Daniel Younga winning by stoppage. I want to say maybe the second round. He'll get his combination and low kick flow going. But more importantly, he's going to let his hands go, get that German crowd into it, and he will close out your prelims. We then move to the Glory Collision pay-per-view card. And that portion of the card has got just some awesome, awesome matchups. The women's final started off clearly, and I mentioned it before, I think that Tiffany Von Seuss was set up to win this tournament the moment that the infusion contract said that it would, you know, they wouldn't allow Iman Barlow to go through the tournament. They thought that it would be a one-off situation. She came in, she was put into the tournament right away, and I'm watching her Facebook post, and like she didn't know it was a tournament. But she was definitely down to fight, you know, because she thought it was all about Tiffany. She's like, everybody wants me to fight Tiffany anyways, you know, we could just set that up. But the disagreements between her infusion contract and the same way that Lion Fight had a contract disagreement with Glory, and it didn't allow Kevin Ross to go into Glory at the time after he had signed. She wasn't able to go into the tournament. So I said that makes it a clear road for Tiffany Von Seuss. But Emile Debbie has performed so well and has gotten, you know, so much in that first fight. Again, she knows what it's like to get her hands raised a lot. She's not, you know, she doesn't see L's. She is a winner as well. Just Tiffany Von Seuss has gone against better opposition. She's more seasoned at this period of time, even though most of that's in full rules Muay Thai. My lean is for Von Seuss, but I'm telling you, my lean's like 51-49. Emile Debbie has got the offensive output to score enough to beat Tiffany Von Seuss. In particular, if Tiffany Von Seuss is scoring just hit and run, hit and run. If she doesn't hang out and land some combinations and stay in the pocket for a little bit, she ain't winning. She will, Mill Debbie will throw too much offense and will score too much. And the next thing you know, the whole round will go by without Tiffany really getting going. She'll just be looking for the big power shots over the top, and she'll never land anything significant. She's got to hit her with something. She's got to hit her with her combos, and she's capable of it. If Tiffany Von Soost just says, hey, I'm going to stay right in the pocket and throw combinations and low kicks with you, she's going to win. But that's not how she plays it. She likes to play with angles, switch stances, defense. She attacks over the top with overhands. She just has sneaky switch stance offense. She plays with a lot of things. Whereas Emil Debbie is she finds her range quickly, and she starts scoring consistently. So a lot of people are picking Debbie to win this one. She'll be right there. She will be right there. Should be an interesting fight to get the glory card started. And it's also very important that in the biggest kickboxing card of the year, your women are showcased. It's the thing that's made professional boxers want to do MMA for the women's game. They see the exposure that the women are getting in mixed martial arts when their major cards are including them. The major men's boxing cards don't include the women. But for our major kickboxing event of the year to include the women is a win for Franklin and John Franklin, CEO, and the entire Glory team. That's just awesome, awesome stuff. Next fight on the card is Ishmael Lunt as he takes on Jamal Ben Sadiq. This is a who's going to be standing. I like Ishmael Lunt's kickboxing over Jamal Ben Sadiq's. I think that their KO power is about equal. They both have the ability. Sadiq has more KOs, but I definitely think that Lunt has the ability to land that same kind of crack. But the problem is with Jamal Ben Sadiq, it's been a while since I've seen him win a kickboxing match. I would say the last time I've seen him kickbox well in a fight would be the fight with Roman Bonjowski and the Glory 16-man tournament. That was where he was able to catch and counter kick the older Bonjowski all night, and he kickboxed pretty good there. But other than that, he usually just comes out guns blazing, swinging, trying to land that big shot to put people down. And that's why he had the Peter Arts victory, the Peter Arts situation where Peter Arts, he's beating him, and then Peter Arts comes back and stops him. It's just, he gets wild, his technique goes. Once upon a time, this guy beat Rico Verheeven. He beat him by KO. I was there when it happened. It was at It's Showtime in Amsterdam, in one of their smaller venues, not the arena. And he beat him that night. And the day before, I've mentioned that story before, I did an interview with Simon Roots, and he said Rico Verheeven's going to be the future of kickboxing. And then Ben Sadiq knocked him out the next day. He's got the kind of power to do that. He just doesn't have the consistent kickboxing. Whereas Ishmael Lunt has that power. He has his gas tank issues, but he'll score, and he'll kickbox with you, and he'll low kick with you. He'll come back. He'll come out and find his moment. So Ishmael Lunt, I've got him beating Jamal Ben Sadiq. Nicky Holtzkin is, best kickboxer in the world right now. If you were going to go off of just, resume of late, I do feel like, as far as the Glory brand goes, he's the best kickboxer. He's been winning for quite some time. He's not undefeated for the promotion. He was beaten, and I mentioned this before for those who follow. He's only been undefeated since they've had their TV deals and so on with Spike and ESPN and that kind of deal, whatever. But back when they had first started their own thing because they weren't able to buy K1 and they were trying to get, fights for their, fighters for their events. Back in those days, the best fighter on the card was Gokhan Saki. He was the guy winning consistently and so on. And Gokhan still went on to have a good career. But Holtzkin was still winning and getting good KO victories. He just, had a, I won't say a mental lapse loss, but, when he, Artur Kashchenko, I would say that bout he waited to play counter too much. And Artur Kashchenko, even though he took a couple same side counters, he just out kickboxed them and he won a 3-round decision easy. Since that day, Nicky Holtzkin's been a different guy. He's offensive when he needs to be offensive. He's defensive when he needs to be defensive. And he still rips through the body. But his combination and sitting on the power, that's always been there. He's always had that. What we have in Cedric Dombe is a young, up-and-coming guy who doesn't, he's just, it's almost like the moment is too big to be too big for him. You know what I'm saying? It's like he gets that stage and he's thinking, he only thinks, oh, I belong here. He doesn't go onto the stage thinking, this is the biggest kickboxing event of the year. How am I going to do? I don't think those nerves go into play as much. He thinks, this is Holtzkin's time has come. I'm the guy who's going to end it. I think it's going to be difficult for him to beat Nicky Holtzkin. I think Nicky Holtzkin will. I think Dombey may be able to get himself to the end of the fight, but he's just going against a guy who's superior, who's better in every area. Dombey might have some moments where explosion could help him, but really, Nicky Holtzkin doesn't go down too much. You know, I mean, he has had the you know, Alzny Uzny, where he had the down there early in the fight. But really, he does, his chin holds up for the most part, and he's taking some pretty big shots. He gets into his combination flow pretty quick, and even if you score a lot of low kicks on him like Joseph Antolini, he was still able to bite down, find his offense to the body, you know, still score his own low kicks, and then he ended up finishing that fight with the right hand. So he's dangerous throughout, no question about it. So we move on from that, you know, Nicky Holtzkin, who I have winning the decision there, and we go to the biggest fight of kickboxing in quite some time. They're promoting it like it's the biggest fight ever. What we have here is the same thing that we got in boxing, where we had, you know, the goal was they waited a little bit too long, but when Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather met, we had the most popular guy against the best talent. That was the kind of goal behind it. That was the goal behind that. So a better example of it would be there was a period of time where people thought Pacquiao was the best fighter in the world. Despite Mayweather's, you know, resume, they liked Pacquiao. And when he went against De La Hoya, that was the biggest star in boxing, the consistent pay-per-view draw over the years. You look at this, we have Rico Verheeven, who is the heavyweight king right now. He's winning and he's stopping guys. He is your kickboxing world champion, and you've got Badr Hari, who is historically the biggest name in kickboxing for the last, I want to say, at least 10 years. You go back to him, we're talking about a guy who is groomed for success, and the way that people thought Ignatov one day was going to be the elite kickboxer in the world, Badr Hari had that hype and more. He's a guy who he wasn't even in a heavyweight body when he started to make his reign up the ranks. He was sitting around, you know, the 85, 86, 87 kgs, and he was still knocking out heavyweights. He had the length, he had the KO power, he had the attitude, he had it all, and he had the charisma. Got into, you know, he loses to Ignatov by stoppage, gets up, stops his next few opponents. Just nothing mentally phases him. He loses to Stefan Leko by spinning back kick stoppage. He beats him by spinning a hook kick stoppage to the head. Talks afterwards, I said I was going to do it. Gets him to the talk trash. You know, he was the figure. He was it. K1 loved him. The fans, there was a highlight made after he illegally hit Badr Hari, or Badr Hari illegally hit Remy Bonjasky on the ground. There was a highlight about how Badr Hari was a for real man and like a real fighter, and Remy Bonjasky was a coward and he didn't fight and he wouldn't move on and that kind of stuff, whatever. And then when it happened again down the road to Hezdi Higgins, those people didn't apologize. They just still love Badr. Badr left the game for a while. It was like, oh, it's good for Badr. He needs to get out of sport. It's tough for him right now, whatever. He has a loyal following, and I can't tell you, I can't say this enough. When I was filming the documentary and I watched his comeback fight against Tony Gregory, the way the crowd responded when he walked through the audience, it was something when he fought Semi Schilt, but it was something else when he fought there, because they got a huge Moroccan community in France, and they ran at him. It was like watching, you know, Michael Jackson, if you will. The pictures of him at, like, you know, rallies in Morocco. He is a star. He is the biggest star in kickboxing. Attitude, KO power, and then the vulnerability comes into play too. He's been dropped before. He's had to get up before. He's given us kickboxing moments. You know, his spinning hook kick, one of the scariest, most violent KOs that you're ever going to see. The second fight with Ruslan Karev, where he goes down and then he gets up and then Karev goes down. One of the craziest things I've ever seen. When you look back on it, he's given you kickboxing moments, and people can get victories, but you can't always get moments, and that's what he brought. He brought moments. So we have a really special fighter in the case of Badr Hari, but it's also a guy who has gotten in his own way. He's a guy who has had, you know, domestic abuse, you know situations, bar fight situations. I remember I told you guys before where There was a guy who got into, who's pretty much beat up with, beaten up by Badr Hari or whatever at some club or something like that. And then he went to a case and they were like, okay, it's Badr Hari. And then like a week later, he recanted and said that, you know, he wasn't sure who it was, who his attacker was. And then I remember I was getting a ride home from some kickboxers when I trained at a gym, when I was out there filming the documentary. And one of the guys just says, he's a 6'6 Moroccan guy. You know damn well who Badr Hari is. You did not forget who he was. There's this mystique that maybe someone came and talked to that guy and told that guy to say something different. Maybe nothing happened. There is just, you know, he's got, you know, kids. He's got, you know, women. He's got, you know, good people around him, bad people around him. There's all this stuff surrounding Badr Hari, you know, the fights that he took over with Krylov, you know, and, you know, just the fights in Russia. Just you look at it all. And some of these fights he's not even really training for full. He just goes in there off of his, you know, kickboxing experience. He is not just a kickboxing star. He's also a kickboxing figure that won't be replaced anytime soon. That's who he is in the sport. So he's a guy who could come in on his A game or a guy who can come in on his I'm not really into it game. And that's the guy who lost is to beat Semedov. So you've got that. And then on the other hand, you've got Rico Verheerven, who is the consummate, I'm going to get myself better until I'm the best guy. As I mentioned before, I had seen him fight when he was younger. And then one night I'm there for the Infusion card and, you know, for a Showtime card. Simon Root says the night before, I really do believe he's going to be the best fighter in the world. What happens? He goes out there and gets stopped by Ben Sadiq. But then he keeps working. He keeps working. Gets some fights, gets some wins. Goes against Errol Zimmerman. He loses to Errol Zimmerman. He gets stopped. He gets stopped in an exchange in another It's Showtime event. And he's talking to his trainer. And if you guys watch the Shin on Shin documentary, you'll hear him say this. He said, I'm training. He said, his trainer said to him, I'm training you to get better so that when you get to the top, you're going to stay there. So he goes back to the gym. He keeps working. He avenges the Errol Zimmerman loss. Avenges it twice. Beats him, and then he stops him. He was winning that fight before the injury stoppage to Zimmerman. Shout out to Errol Zimmerman, who finally came back after being away from the sport for a little while. He got a victory last weekend. Little sidebar there. But Rico Verheerven gets that victory. He continues to add to his game. Controversial over the down call, but he still did a great job of offsetting Gokhan Saki with the body kicks. Now, again, Gokhan Saki, his whole game plan is out the window once you get that 10-8 against you. So he had to work himself out of a hole. But Rico Verheerven offset him with the body kicks. Rico Verheerven then goes out and beats Daniel Guida in a very close fight. Then goes out and beats Daniel Guida again in a very close fight. And at this period of time, people believe Daniel Guida is the best in the world. And they believe that Rico Verheerven got lucky and just didn't get the decision to go. Or he just got a decision that should have went to the actual best in the world, Daniel Guida. But he beats Daniel Guida in a 5-rounder after that. So then, of course, he continues to get better. The fights with Benjamin Adebuyi. He's in trouble after the first round. Doesn't go down, but he gets in trouble to Adebuyi. Then rounds 4 through 5, he runs away with it. Him and Adebuyi meets again. He bowls him out in the first round. All of a sudden, he's showing KO pop. The Zimmerman stoppage comes after that. The Anderson Broderick Silva stoppage. He has proven to be the best fighter in the world. The Mladen Brastovic is also another victory that's in there. In these fights, he's showing boxing. He's showing low kicks to the inside leg, outside leg, inside back rear leg. He can attack every part of the leg. Keeps you offset. Really sneaky high kick. Boxing so good. He's turned himself into a polished best kickboxer in the world. With that said, the majority of the kickboxing world is leaning towards Badr Hari winning this fight tomorrow. I'm still thinking Rico Verheerven. And the only reason why I'm thinking it is because I think that Rico has got the chin to withstand that first round, and it becomes a much different fight after round one. Not that Rico can't score the offense to stop Badr Hari. You know, it's not that he can't do it in round one. But Badr Hari, he's even joked with commentators about, do you think I train for these fights? I've heard this before. I've heard Tyrone Spong say it when I've asked him about certain fights. Those guys are so used to training, and once you get to a certain level, they believe that their skill will carry them, and it does. Their skill and their power carries them to victories. And Badr Hari was able to win fights that he didn't even really prepare for all, you know, that well, because he's such a great athlete, fighter, and he knows the game. he came into this one dedicated. I was going to do a kickboxing, like, a little film for this. I was going to put out a little video. Like, I've done it before. I did it for Tyrone and Peter Arts. I was going to do, like, a little hype video for it. But his team had been posting something, like, every other day, some little video of him training or doing something. And I go, hands off. All I got to do is sit back and watch. Watch how this stuff goes down. They had a really intense stare down this morning. It's just everything is set up for this to be a great night. The only thing that we don't want to happen, and don't rule it out, a DQ could definitely happen. Badr Hari could definitely be so emotional about wanting this win, some things not go his way, punch a ref, something like that. Wouldn't rule it out because he's Hari, you know what I'm saying? Once he gets his mind made up that he don't, give a what, he's going, he's sometimes getting hit, and he doesn't care who sometimes. But I definitely think Badr Hari's coming to, he's going to bring it. He's not the same kickboxer he was. His fight with Glover Feitosa is one of the cleanest kickboxing matches you're ever going to see from a heavyweight. It is clean. It is simple jab low kick, hook low kick, cross switch kick. Simple, simple, simple offense, combination back high kick. And he gets him in trouble. Offense on the ropes. Peel scores it down. Peel throws his hands and he sneaks a power lead uppercut, I believe is the shot that finishes it. But like one of the cleanest performances you're ever going to see. He's not that guy anymore. He's a guy who can find his KO shot at any period of time. He's the guy who could, beat Gokhan Saki, which is strong power boxing. And this is probably his toughest bout since that second Gokhan Saki fight, the one that he won very clearly in Amsterdam. This is his second big-time fight since that moment. Not that the names weren't, horrible, but this is the second fight where I'm like, this is the first fight since that day where I'm like, this is legit. I've got Rico Verhaeven winning, but I definitely am about 55-45 Rico towards Badr because I haven't seen Badr on form in a long time, but he still has the ability to go out there and win by KO easy. He's that level of fighter. So follow me on Twitter tomorrow. I'm going to watch the whole show. I'll be breaking it down. I'll reply. This is our day. Kickboxing fans, this is our day. If you are an MMA fan, you're listening to this podcast for the first time, check us out tomorrow. Check kickboxing out tomorrow. The product will not fail you. You will see it in its highest form. You will see some of the best fighters on the planet. You will see us. Our product usually doesn't fail. People usually don't get behind our storylines as much. This time we've got it. This time we've got our best kickboxing heavyweight going against our best kickboxing star. So give us a shout. Give us a try tomorrow if you've never watched it before. We really think we won't let you down. And unfortunately for the pay-per-view, it's going to take some hits because this is going to be streamed all over Facebook, no question about it. You will be able to get this for free, even though ideally you should be paying for it. But it's just too big. It's Badr Hari. It's just like Bukau. Their fights are going to end up online. You just can't. Bukau, Badr Hari, if they fight, it's ending up online. So give us a try if you've never given us a try before. And if you are a kickboxing fan, be watching. If you're not a forum guy anymore because the forums aren't as big anymore, get on Twitter. Find me. Stephen the Warman on Twitter. Twitter.com/Stephen the Warman. Find me. I'm going to be breaking down this collision card. We're going to have fun tomorrow night. This is our sport. This is its best representation. Go out there, watch our athletes, and enjoy. God bless everybody, and let's have fun.